Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, it's time to get real. Oh, yeah. It's a new experience.
Spirituality.
Yeah, keep your ears open for this one,
man. Spirituality.
You got a question for RLN?
Reality. Spirituality.
Yeah, it's time to get some answers, baby.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to Reality Spirituality. I'm your host, Rebecca Lynn Norrington, and I want to thank you for being part of the audience. Thank you so much for your emails. Thank you for your words of support. Thank you for your questions. Thank you for your responses to Reality Spirituality. Reality Spirituality has been on live for over 2 years, and we have audiences from around the world. So to my new listeners, you're probably wondering, what the hell, Reality Spirituality? What kind of show is this? Well, let me explain to you what this show is about. Indulge me just for a minute. Close your eyes and remember a time when you experienced an indescribable moment. A moment that connected you with the energy, with source energy, with the energy that creates worlds. A moment when you were connected to heaven and earth. I know for me that when I have these moments, I am overwhelmed and every cell of my body is on fire and every cell of my body is feeling the emotion of, it's actually indescribable. Usually, most of the time, I start crying because the moment is so rich and so full. So I want you to remember a time, moments like that in your life. And we've all had them. It's a moment where we're overwhelmed with this peace, with this internal knowing, that knowing who we are. We're happy. We're joyful. We're grateful. All of those emotions are just filling every single inch of our being. Can you remember a moment like that that you've had? Well, Reality Spirituality, this show, shares, teaches all of us how to have more of those moments in our lives. More of those moments in every moment, during every day. More of those moments. And I'm sorry, but it doesn't get any better than that. This show, Reality Spirituality, it's not a religion. It's a guideline to living connected to the universe in every possible moment of your life. Some people use the term, some people say God, some people say energy source, some people say Buddha, higher power, source, energy, spirit. I use the term universe. And so Reality Spirituality, we focus on our everyday life experiences, and we dissect every single moment down to the least common denominator to reveal what's going on and why we're not as happy as we could be, why we're not as connected as we know that we can be. Remember, if you have those moments throughout your life, and I know that you have, you can have more of those. So this show shares how to have more of those moments. That sounds good to me. So when I use the word happy, I'm not talking about, okay, we're having an event, everything works out, and now we're happy. We meet the love of our life, and now we're happy. I'm not talking about an external happiness. I'm talking about this internal foundation. I say an internal temperature gauge that is set on contentment. Your temperature gauge is set on peace, set on knowing, trusting, and really importantly, surrendering. Surrendering to all that is happening, surrendering to all that you are experiencing, surrendering to every person in your life, and you know that each person is there to be a reflection and a mirror of you. That's what this reality, that's what this show is about, and I am your host, and let me tell you something. When I was younger, I wanted two things. I wanted to live to my potential, and I wanted to be happy. And so I say I'm a happiness specialist, and I really mean that because that's my priority. My priority is my internal temperature gauge, regardless of what's going on, regardless of health issues, regardless of financial issues, regardless of work issues, what doesn't matter. Setting my internal temperature gauge is my number one priority. Now, today we have a guest. And you know I love interviewing the most important and most influential people in the entire world, and we have such a person on our show today. Let me give you a little bit of his background. Ken Kaufman, and let me say this, he is the godfather and the producer of the New Living Expo. And he's been the producer of the Whole Life Expo for over 12 years. He's been producing spiritual expos for over 25 years. We're going to hear all about it. And on a personal note, and I love this about Ken, he strived to have the very best, most spiritual relationship with his dear wife, Karina. And they both enjoy an ongoing search of finding new ideas and techniques for creating love, peace, and harmony with others. Doesn't it sound like a wonderful man? Let's get to know him. Ken, you are live on Reality Spirituality. Hello. Welcome to the show.
Well, hello, Rebecca, and thank you for having me, and thank everyone for listening in.
Yes, yes. So give us a little bit of background. You know, we can read a little bit of your bio, but I want to know about you, Ken the Man. We're going to talk about the New Living Expo that is coming up at the end of the month, April the, you know, I'm going to let you tell everybody about that. But let's start at the beginning. The beginning of your journey. And when did you know this, who you wanted to be, who you are?
That's a good question. I don't know that it's interesting. I think for me it was more of, you know how people always say, well, one door closes, another one opens. For me it was like doors were opening right and left for me, and I was just looking at opportunities and going, well, let's see. I haven't had really any kind of bad luck with opening doors and closing other ones. So I think I'm just going to go for it. And I think that's sort of, you know, the bigger picture of my life, because I've just looked at opportunities and just been openly going into them. And some people go into those changes and they're like resistant and they're like, I'm not sure if it's going to be a good move, maybe changing a job or something. And for me, it was more like I just felt like I was maybe pulled, or this is my destiny or something. It was like there was a higher power pulling me into these situations where it led me to producing these shows for so many years. It was so ironic, and I'll give you some details. It all started back in the 70s.
Yeah, that's what I want, a little bit more details. Yeah, because you weren't born, you know, 10 years old, 12 years old, 15 years old with this. So, I love the details. Thank you, Ken.
I'll go from the very, very beginning. This is really funny because I'm at my mom's house. I'm probably, 20 years old or something or about that. And I'm growing some mint in the backyard.
Mm.
And you know how mint grows. It's just like a weed. It just starts taking over everything. My mom's like, we got to get rid of this stuff. It's just too much. So I put it in a big, giant trash bag. I take it down to my local little health food store, which is, I think at that point it was called the Third Eye in Southern California, if anybody remembers that. They were more like herb shops than health food stores. And I took it to the guy, and the guy said, "Oh, wow, you have quite a bit in here. Let me take it, and I'll dry it, and I'll go ahead and, come back in a couple weeks, and I'll tell you how much credit you have because, based on how dry it is and, get a few pounds, you probably, make $20, $30, $40 or something, right?"
Yes, yes.
So I forget about it for a while. I come back in about a month, and the guy says, "Oh, no. Oh, that's what stinks in my garage. That's what it was. I forgot. Denver took it out of the bag."
Oh, my goodness.
So I felt really bad. So we said, "Listen, just, help yourself to like $30 worth of credit." And I'm like, "Okay." So I bought a book called Herbs and Things. And that was my start of this whole discovery, like self-discovery of health and nutrition. And I would be buying my mom herbs for his cooking. And it was like, that was like my little Bible. And it was probably still around. And the interesting thing is that I never really, my mom would say, I was kind of asking her, "What should I get?" And she was like, "Get a book you might want to read, So when I saw that, I was just like, I was drawn to it. And from that point, my life just did like I'm into health now kind of thing. Like before that, I was like a little kid just kind of running around wild.
Yeah.
But that really kind of set the tone for what I was about to explore myself, because I really wasn't, I was like a kid growing up like most other kids, bullied and not really having a good time, didn't feel like I fit in. But this turned a corner. And that corner, it pretty much was propelling of my life. I didn't know it at the time, obviously, because you don't really know what doors are going to open at the time, but it just made a nice little transition for kind of a young lad to sort of discover yourself.
That's so interesting because, ooh, and just for you, I don't know, I'm feeling this story, and just for you to get that guidance at that early age, and you even mentioned something about being bullied and not really enjoying, can I say that you weren't really enjoying your social time? Can I say that, or am I jumping to a conclusion?
No, but that's very true. I was not a happy little child.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So that's really, really interesting that the universe has gave you this gift. So you, and you know what? It's just, I love these kind of stories because you were drawn to basically who you were going to become, not become, but who you were going to, not who you were going to, but you're drawn to your destiny, let's say that, at such an early age. So you got this book and there was something about it that just felt like it was a fit.
It very much resonated with it too.
Yes. So then what happened, Ken Kaufman?
What's that?
I said, so then what happened, Ken Kaufman?
So from that point on, I think I got involved with, and not too much longer, I got involved with these massage sandals that you would wear and the little bumps on them when you walk around.
Yes.
And so at that point, there wasn't very many companies selling those things, but I liked them, and I would buy a pair every so often, and then my family would see me wearing these silly shoes, and they'd go, "Well, let me try that on." And they'd go, "Oh, wow, that feels great. My feet feel like I'm getting massages. I'm walking all around." It's like, this is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually what happened is my family would say, "Well, can you get me a pair?" So I'm like, now I'm interested in helping my family and friends by buying a half a dozen shoes at a time, getting a wholesale price, right?
Yes.
From that point, I was buying, you know, a dozen shoes here and there, you know, not a big business or anything, but I was just, you know, maintaining what my friends were needing. So around 79, 78, I was planning on doing a trip around the world. You know, I'm 27, didn't even know about Saturn returns at that point, you know, where, you know, every 28
years.
I have a really
quick question before you go on. So where were you working? What was your 9-to-5 job while you were doing all of this? You had to have been supporting yourself. How were you doing that?
I think at that point I was like, way back when, I think I was like a delivery person delivering products and working at this paper company in Southern California.
Okay,
so,
got
know,
it. Okay.
One mm-hmm. of those things, I came into that job, and this is interesting because this is like one of the first jobs I ever had. You know how most time you get a you go for an interview and a job and you're like, here's my qualifications, here's my skills, will you hire me, you know? So
yes.
I turned the table, and this is interesting. I made it seem like, okay, here's my job, here's my skill sets. Now, what do you have to offer? What am I going to be doing? What's the details of the job? And no, I don't want $6 an hour. I want $7.50 because I know I'm really worth it. And at that point, I was like almost interviewing them to see if I would be happy being at this job, and the variety of different tasks that I would do wouldn't be just like delivery and that's it. I would like do so many different things in the business. But I really was like, I was interviewing him to say, okay, so you're going to hire me. You're going to be really lucky to have me, and I want to, you know, be happy here, and, you know, I want to know what I'm going to be getting myself into, not just hire me because I'm desperate, you know what I mean?
Okay, so you know what? Now that's a really, really, really important point that you just said. And whatever age that was, you said in your 20s, either, you know, mid-20s,
yeah,
27. What you're saying is, which is really important, that you knew your value. And not only did you know your value, but you were taking care of yourself. You wanted to make sure that you were going to be happy and or satisfied in whatever position in the position that you were going to be working. That's really huge.
Yeah, at an early age, just to have that inner strength to be able to tell somebody what you want and to be firm and stern about it and feel good about it, you know.
Yeah, and not back down and feel that. And not only that, it didn't even matter. You were ready to. This is all the big deals. These are how big deals are made also. You're ready to walk away if you are not satisfied with the position and if somebody else wouldn't see or couldn't see your value or your worth. That's huge.
Yeah, and it's almost like when people could relate, like, oh, when I go to buy a car, I want to lowball the guy, and if I don't meet my price, I walk out. That same attitude.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right. Ooh, good stuff. Okay, keep going. I love the story so far. I love it. Keep going.
Okay. Well, we got plenty to sell. So, and we have lots of money. Thank you. So from that point, I would be, let's see. So let me go back to that area. Let me think about it and put myself in that space there. All right. So I'm a young lad, kind of like, so I would buy these shoes, and then I'm going to be traveling, so I'm planning a trip in advance, about a year. And so when I'm doing my travels around the world for a year, which was like the most mind-boggling, you know, could you imagine being 27 years old, single guy, not bad looking, traveling around the world for a year, I think in that year I probably fell in love 7 times, I think.
Well, I have a question. What was your purpose, or why did you want to travel? Or what was in, you know, inside of you that you needed to travel? What was that?
You know, I think it's more of an inner desire of just exploring the world and knowing, you know, when you're young, you just, you know, Southern California growing up and knowing, you know, not a lot, and just, you know, when I first got my license, I remember just driving for like 2 hours just to get out of L.A. just to.
Okay.
Like, so I think, look, the adventureness in me was just curious,
okay.
And And I just I did a lot of research for the whole year before I left to see where I wanted to go, and I had to plan each leg that I was going to travel to, but I wouldn't know how long I could stay for as long as I want. It's one of those around the world tickets, but you have to go in one direction. And if you cross the hemisphere, you add on a little thing, which I did. But so I had to map out. I wanted to go from point A to point B, but the time I could go, I could stay as long as I wanted to, but I had a year to use it up. So that was the airline ticket that I bought.
Okay. So you know, and everybody doesn't have that adventurous soul. So that's why I was just curious. Keep going. This is a great story.
Okay, so I'm preparing and planning, and so now I'm off and rearing and going, and then the travels were just amazing. Took 1,400 slides in the year, and took like a nice slideshow when I come back and made a diary and everything. Still have everything, but anyway, so I'm coming back, and when I come back, the family now has their shoes have worn out, so everybody's asking me. You know, not just a few people, now it's like 10, 15 people going, okay, I'm ready for a new pair of shoes because, you know, they last for about a year. And so I thought, well, I went to go find that company and I couldn't find them anymore. They were like, they got out of business. It was weird. I couldn't find them. So I'm going into a local health food store in Malibu and I'm seeing a pair of these Masseur sandals from Australia thinking, well, that's pretty close and it looks like the same idea and, you know, about the same price. So, you know, I'll call the company and find out what the deal is. So the guy from Australia basically told me, if you buy a 12, you can get the wholesale price. But if you go and commit to 50, I'll give you the distributor price, which is like 30% off of the wholesale price.
Mm.
That's kind of like that's a lot, but, you know, I was a little hesitant at first, but I thought, maybe I could sell them at the swap meets or something, you know. And so I went ahead and bought the 50. And what the guy did, which was one of the biggest gifts I ever had in my life, is that he basically gifted me the Birkenstock shoe stores in Southern California to service. And in all of California, there was about 20 stores that he said, you know, since you're a distributor, I want to give you these distributor stores because I don't want to have to call on them. And since you're buying them, you may as well, you know, have those accounts. So it was like, what a gift. I mean, the guy didn't know me from anything, and he's just giving me all this. So I did a little thing inside. I did some soul searching, and I said, well, you know, I'm going to prove to him that that was a good move for him. So I went ahead and got in my little VW Scorvax in 1972, right? And I didn't buy it in 72, but... And I got in my square back, and I would go around to stores, and I would sell them these shoes. And I would be, you know, I was buying hundreds at a time at one point. And to supplement those items, I would go down to Chinatown. And, you know, people see in Chinatown, you see all these little wooden rollers and rope massagers and all these little
trinkets
back. You know, they always have these things for like $1 or $2 in a bag, right? So I pick up about maybe four or five different of these products, and I line pencil them piece of paper, what they kind of look like on a piece of paper, and say, okay, this is the retail, $10, and the wholesale is $6, and my cost is about $1.50, $2, right? So I would take those to the health food stores, not even packaged right, just in a bag, right? And they would buy them at wholesale. So the next thing, you know, I'm buying like 50 to 100 of each of these items, and I'm starting what I would call, because I asked my friend from Australia, so I got this company, but I don't even know what to call it. He says, well, what are you selling? You're selling massage tools to health food stores. Okay, well, let's call it body tools. So that's when the birth of body tools started in the late, well, it was early 80s at that point, like 82.
Mm-hmm.
So I was now like a distributor, wholesaler to health food stores nationwide. And people would find me, and they'd call me up, and I would send them my little one piece of paper with line drawings of these different tools. And at one point, I went ahead and got a backswing where you hang upside down on your feet.
Yeah.
And I would send all my little wears and tears down to Venice Beach on the boardwalk. And that's still the same. People still set up little jewelry things on the Venice Beach boardwalk, and not as many places you can go nowadays. But people watch on the Sunday people walking after they've had their brunch. It's just a gas of a time. And so I would hang people upside down on the beach, trying to sell these machines too for like $300.
Right.
I rarely sold any, but it was like an amusement. People would walk by and they'd see somebody hanging upside down. They'd go, what's this? So I would end up with a crowd around me of maybe 30, 40 people watching this person hang upside down, maybe embarrassing the guy, who knows. But, you know, I would draw like a lot of attention. And those people would look at what I have on my table and they would buy from me. And I would end up making, you know, $100, $200 in a day. You know, not bad for way back then.
Oh, yeah.
Selling these trinkets. And from that point, it led me into starting to do shows. I would go to shows and sell these products, and eventually, and this is, I got to backtrack a little bit. Because
I was about to say we have to backtrack just a little bit, because what kind of shows are you talking about? I mean, you and I know, but I want the audience to know.
Well, actually, the first shows I would do would be like, there was a National Health Federation show in L.A. that they would have a three-day show, and Friday was the Free Friday, and I would go and exhibit my products. Now, before I left my trip around the world, I forgot to say this one thing, is that in 78, I decided to take a trip, and I drove up to Canada, and I fell in love with this Canadian lady, and we were in massage together right night and day, and she said, you've got really great hands, right? So I said, yeah, okay, you know. So on my way down to L.A. from Canada, from Vancouver, she was saying, you know, you might want to consider doing massage as a profession. So I thought, no, that's, you know, sex workers, it's not for me, you know. And so I ended up, on my travels back to L.A. from that trip, I thought, well, I'll look into massage school. So this is like September, because I'm gone for the summer, because in L.A. you want to be gone for the summer as much as you can. And I decided to go to massage school. So in 78, at the end of 78, I took a massage class. I went to the class, and they said, well, we just started like 2 days ago, but if you want to catch up, you know, you can make up a couple of days, and you can go to this three-month massage school, like a quickie class. So I thought, you know, I've got these good hands. I may as well do that. So I ended up going through massage school, graduated in 79, and Santa Monica Massage School, which is probably still around. And I had to buy a massage table, like everybody else when they finished massage school. Well, me being my entrepreneur at that point, I wasn't just going to buy one table. I want to buy six and get a wholesale price.
Mm.
So I buy the six, and I start telling my classmates, hey, I've got tables for sale, $135. You know, it would be like a few dollars less than anybody else selling. And they would buy their tables for me. But it took a really long time. It took like, you know, 6 months or 8 months from people I knew putting signs up to sell these six tables. So I figured I'm just going to buy those and just want to get my one for free kind of thing. So I'm done selling all these tables, and people keep calling me up going, okay, I'm ready to buy a table now. I was thinking about it before. I'm like, well, I'm not really doing that anymore. I'm like, so it really, what it did at that point, it forced me into business. Selling massage tables to people who were finishing massage school or just wanted to buy a table. Well, before I left on my trip around the world, for that period of just a couple of years, year and a half, I was selling 30 tables a month. And at that time, we had the Recycler down in L.A., which I think it still exists.
Yes.
You put free ads in it, and people would just call you up, and, you know, you just got so much business from it. But I think it's interesting. So I gave the business to my older brother at the time while I'm gone, like, hey, maintain the ads in here and, you know, you'll sell tables and you'll make a little bit of money. Keep people happy, right?
Yeah.
So I was doing 30 tables a month as an average and, you know, making some pretty good money, you know, 30, 40 bucks a table I would make. And the 1 year that I was gone selling tables, my brother sold probably like 25 tables in the whole year. And I was like, wow, wonder why, what was different, you know? And that same difference is the difference of why I'm successful now in things that I do, because it's like my heart and energy is into it. My brother wasn't. And people were feeling that and must have been drawn to that to want to come to what I'm doing. You know, hey, I want to attach myself to that good juju, good feelings.
Yes,
right?
Yes. Okay, so now this is really good because now you're right. There are different people are different, and your passion, whatever your passion is, people are drawn to whatever you're passionate about. Is that what you're saying?
And the passion is what drives so much of what we enjoy about ourselves. You know, if we're doing a job and we're not really happy at it, but if you find something you love doing, is that considered a job anymore? No, it's considered you're doing something you love to do. It's fun. You know, when people are self-employed and they're, you know, working double the hours they probably would work in a regular job, but they're having fun doing it, they don't look at it as work. They look at it as this is the love that they're doing. This is fun. This is their work. This is their passion, right?
Yes, exactly, exactly. And it sounds like you are passionate about a lot of things. So that's what I'm feeling. It's just not just selling and buying and selling. It's just, but you have this, you know, drawn with this, you know, with the holistic, natural herbs, feeling good, massage, and wanting other people to share in what you are passionate about.
And that was being, you know, I'm being tested all the time with these
yes.
opportunities.
Yes. You're just being you. You're being the full Ken Kaufman. You're being full of who you are.
Right. And it was serving me, and everything I was doing, all these things were like, they're like ripe. The fruit would become ripe, and I'm just like, wow, it was blowing me away. I was like, like something wrong at that point, you know.
Mm-hmm. So let's get to the part where I don't want to skip over anything, but
yeah.
I definitely want to have enough time to talk about the New Living Expo and all and everybody that's going to be, you know, not everybody, but your guests and how that's set up. So let's
okay.
get to, you said you're selling, no, not selling, but you were appearing or going to the shows in Los Angeles, and so these shows led to...
Well, so I'm exhibiting at the shows, selling massage tables, I'm having the massage tools, and I'm exhibiting in what they were at that point in the early 80s, the Whole Life Expos in Southern California. And I would travel even to San Francisco and do a couple of shows there in the mid-80s. And so at one point, a friend of mine who didn't even really know him that well said he heard that the Whole Life Expo in L.A. was for sale. And I thought, well... You know, I know it's a good show because I've been exhibiting for a couple of years. And let's go for it. You know, it was only $10,000 a piece. I had saved up enough money selling these little massage tools to health food stores to afford that. And I thought, well, this is fun. I could begin. Now I'm an owner of an expo, and I'm still doing my body tools business.
Well,
so
wait a minute.
Along,
The Whole Life Expo is for sale? What?
It was for sale in 86. What happened is the guy who ran it had Whole Life magazine at the time, Joseph Kotler out of New York, and he had these expos that he was running, and the magazine was not doing so well in business, but the expos were making money. So they took what they needed, which was making money, trying to save the magazine and keep it alive, and it worked for a while. But it, you know, eventually folded because, you know, you can only put money into something that's not working for a little while, and then it decides that, you know, it drains you so much you can't afford to do it anymore. So they sold what asset they had, which was the Whole Life Expo. But when we bought it, the L.A. one had just bought, somebody else bought it like a month before us. We're like, damn, because we're in L.A., we wanted to buy the L.A. one.
Mm-hmm.
So thank God that person bought it because it forced me to buy the San Francisco one that I really at first didn't want it because I thought, you know, and we tried to run the San Francisco one after we bought it out of L.A., out of my home, and that didn't work because you have to be in the field to feel the flowers. You can't do it remotely, which is what I was trying to do. And so we're in L.A. and we're doing it, and then we moved to San Francisco to do the first Whole Life Expo in 1987 at the Moscone Convention Center. And we had to hire the guy who we bought it from. That was one of the criteria, give him a job for a couple of years and pay him a ridiculous amount of money. And the whole time of doing the show, my partner at the time and this person we had to hire were just constantly at war with each other. They couldn't get along. They couldn't agree to anything. And we decided, you know, that I was like the mediator of that whole energy, the whole 3, 4, or 5 months that we were putting this thing on. And it bugged me, but at the same time, it's like, this is what I have to do. I have to, you know, keep the show going, stay focused, and try to stay with the big picture and everything. So we did the show, and it was a Summer of Love after 67. It was the 20-year Summer of Love celebration. We had all these, we had an ongoing music all day in one of these ballrooms, and It's a Beautiful Day played, and all these Moby Grape, and I don't know, so many different bands. And that, and we lost about $50,000 on that show because we just way overextended ourselves and paying a lot of money for this guy. Well, it turned out to where my partner wanted to do his own show in the fall of that year and wasn't doing very well money-wise and said, listen, I need money and I'm just, you know, I'm kind of just really want to make this show, you know, and I didn't want to be involved with this new show, so he just did it on his own. So he said, you know, give me another $20,000 and you can have the whole expo, Whole Life Expo. You can own the whole thing, and I'll keep my little, you know, my show myself. And I'm thinking, well, okay, I guess, you know, he needed money, and I had some money, so I said, okay, I'll buy it. Now all of a sudden, I'm now the sole owner of Whole Life Expo, and I never really sought it out. It just, you know, the guy told me about it one time, and then we decided to be partners, and the next thing you know, I'm sole owner now. In the fall of 1987, thinking, what am I going to do, you know? So I continue the tradition. I have no partners, no person that I'm hiring to help me manage the show, but I learned enough from the first show to figure it out. So in 1988, when I did the first show by myself, and I actually hired the guy who I bought my sandals from to be my program director because I had no clue about what I was doing much. But we actually turned the corner and made $50,000 on that show. And it was, like, amazing because the energy that I put into it, with all that less bickering and all that stuff didn't matter anymore because it was just me, made it successful from day one of doing it on my own. So I continued that for about 8 years, doing one show a year until about 96, and my staff was saying, yeah, we ought to travel around the country and start, you know, bringing this to more cities. So in 96, the first show we did outside of San Francisco was Austin, Texas. And we made, what I remember was Free Fridays were like a big thing. So we made Fox News became in Austin a sponsor, and we made it Fox Free Friday. So you got to come in free, help you for the from the TV show. And so we ended up with an amazing amount of people, the best show we've ever done in existence of Whole Life Expo. We had Wayne Dyer, we had Deepak Chopra, we had all these big name speakers, and they were drawing in 1,200 people in a workshop for $20. I mean, we filled up this giant ballroom for that many people. So we did really well, and it proved a thing to us, like, wow, we can take this thing on the road and make some money. And, you know, spread the word kind of thing, right? You know, spread spirituality.
Yeah.
And so we ended up doing Atlanta that year in 1996. And so over the next 2 years, we were doing, at the end of 98, when I sold Whole Life Expo to some person, we were doing 8 cities around the country. And I think at that point we were growing a little bit too much and a little bit too fast. So we had to set up each city. We had to set up, and it took a long time. And a kind of a big expense. So in 98, when I sold it, I was actually losing money at that point and really kind of burned out on, like, this is not fun anymore because I'm losing money and I'm not, and too much stress, too many staff and everything. So when I sold it to Justin Hilton, he ended up doing about 10 shows the next year, which I thought, this is great. You know, somebody could take the next level. I'm kind of burned out. Well, he lost $1 million that year doing shows. He sold to somebody else, named Iman, and Iman, after a year and a half, lost $4 million. I'm like, wow, they lost so much money, and I heard these stories, and I'm like, I never had that much money to lose, so I could do that. So after 9/11, they canceled a couple of shows, like L.A. and Chicago, without even doing the Whole Life Expo, because it was like supposed to happen in October, and they just canceled the shows. So I went into the guy in November and said, you know, so you, what about San Francisco for next year in 2002? And he said, well, you know, we're going to do it. I think we're going to do it. We've got a contract. We're probably going to do it. So I said, well, what about if I do it for you? Because you don't have any staff. You got rid of all your staff. He said, well, if you do it, you're going to have to give me 50 booths, and you can use the name Whole Life Expo. So I went back Thanksgiving, talked to my family about that idea, and they said, well, if you do that, you're basically making him look good, satisfying his debt that he canceled all these shows and given to give these exhibitors a, you know, a free booth to make up for the goodwill. And what are you left with after the end of that time? You're going to, you know, make him look good, but you have nothing. You know, you, all your profit's gone.
Right.
So I told the guy, no, I'm sorry, I can't do that, but, you know, c'est la vie, right? So he had, when I sold the show, I had a 3-year non-compete agreement, which most people have that. Well, just the timing is the most synchronistic thing at this point, because about that time, middle of December, is when I sold the show, 3 years before that. So I looked at my contract, and I remember they wanted 5-year non-compete, but I wouldn't only give three. Well, it was 3 days after the 3-year contract expired that I was signing a contract with the concourse to do the show there in 2002, and it was like, and the timing, you couldn't have got better timing. They couldn't go after me for competing. I'm clear, I'm ready to do my own thing, and I'm jumping right into it. And this is like December of 2001. So
mm-hmm.
I went away for my little vacation for Hawaii, come back, and I started in with the show. In 3.5 months, we pulled off, we called it at that point, we didn't know what to call it, New Age Expo in 2002. And then from that point, it was like, okay, so we're just doing one show a year, and we're going to make it always the last weekend of April because that's what people are used to. And I wanted to continue that tradition. So I just, you know, at that time I had met Karina in 2000, and she was always saying, you know, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? In the meantime of those 3 years I wasn't working, I was like, I was director of a massage school in San Francisco. I was working at Pacific Sun Newspapers in the classified section, selling it and collecting some unemployment for that 3-year period of time. And so what it did is it just gave me the opportunity to now go back into the business of doing these expos. And the next year I changed it to New Living Expo in 2003. And it continued that way. And I thought I was just going to come up with a new name every year, but it's like, that doesn't make sense. Just continue with the same name. So I continued to do one show a year the last weekend of April for the next, 10 years or so. And now we come forward to, 2014, another 12-year cycle. And last year, somebody was interested in buying the show again, and I was like, okay, maybe this is time. Maybe I've done it for 12 years. I'm done. You know, I don't have a big debt this time, so I'll make a little bit of money. And the guy fell through last year in buying the show, so I'm another one of those, I'm determined to keep doing it. I'm born to expo. I tell my wife all the time, that's where I know the best. And so my track record is so good. When I sold the show and was losing money, I made sure everyone got paid who was owed any money. So that way I didn't make any money at all when I sold the show. I pretty much was in debt. But I made sure everybody got paid. So that goodwill, when I took it back 3 years later, was like, yeah, I opened my little phone book up and, you know, can you help me get an ad really inexpensive? And can you help me out here and there? And people were just like, yeah, I want to work with you. You have good ethics. And that helped me propel me into doing the shows and being successful, because basically I'm doing a lot of the work mostly by myself at that point, because I have 6 to 9 months out now to do a show, and I have a couple staff people, and for the most part, it's me by myself doing the whole show.
Well, listen, I've been listening here like it's what a great story.
Mm-hmm.
What a great story, not only about not about just your journey and your experiences, but you just said, I'm not tired in a bad way. I'm tired like, wow, this is such a rich story. Not only are you talking about your experiences, but how what you touch and what you are, you know, what the universe has gifted you.
Mm-hmm.
And my favorite is how you made sure everybody was paid. And then, of course, yes, everyone wants to help you, or everyone wants to contribute to your success. It's, you know, what a great energy you are, Ken Kaufman, and what a great service you're giving. And the bottom line is you want people to learn and be inspired with your shows.
And learn, and the biggest difference for me being an owner of an expo like this is that it started as an exhibitor. And so my feeling about exhibitors is different than any other promoter, because it's like,
yes,
if you were in those shoes before you became the manager of those shoes, you have a much different outlook and viewpoint on the success of the exhibitor and making sure that they're happy, because they're your lifeblood of the show. If they don't do well on your show, you're out of business. You don't have another show to do, because if you have a bomb of a show, you can't resurrect that no matter what you do, because if exhibitors aren't buying booths, you don't have a show. And if they're not happy, you pretty much are out of business. So my ambition was always to treat the exhibitors, you know, over-deliver. That's the new one now. Over-deliver for what they're getting. You know, we call every exhibitor up before their show and say, did you get the follow-up kit? Did you get all these packets we sent? No, I didn't, because it ended up my junk mail. Please resend it. You know, that customer service is like, you don't go into the show with not doing half these things and crossing your lines and so many little details. And if you do this, then you go into the show and you have a much more smoother run show. And people always, they just commend me about how smooth and how simple this show is compared to other shows. And they always compare me, like, oh, that show is like, wow, got there and the booth wasn't half of what I thought it was going to be. And, you know, 20% of the people decided to come versus what the promoter told us. And I'm just trying to be authentic and real and tell people, you know, I want to be treated this way, so I'm going to treat you this way. And that's a big difference compared to any other promoter, is being an exhibitor first, knowing what their needs are, and addressing those and making sure that they are happy. And the attendees too. I keep the prices to come into the show so low that money cannot be an issue. If people in the last several years don't have money, we had this canned food drive going on with the San Francisco and San Mateo Food Bank now, San Mateo, is that they bring in 4 cans of food and they get in for free for the day. I mean, you know, you can go to Trader Joe's and buy 49-cent cans or something and bring those in and get free entrance, cost you a couple bucks, or look through your pantry and, you know, get rid of some stuff you don't need anymore and support the food bank. And so money should not be the factor of attending a show like this. We want to educate them. We want to give them the tools that they've been looking for and maybe they haven't been looking for, that they didn't know they existed. There's so many of those out there.
Mm.
And there's many gems in the world to find, but you've got to go through the door. You got to come to the show to see what there is. And there's products and services in a show like this you don't find in a health food store or in a New Age bookstore. These are unique and unusual products that will heal you, they'll transform your life if you're open to it. And that's the key, is come to the show and be open-minded to what there is, possibilities there. I used to have this saying, imagine a world of infinite possibilities. That was our slogan. I'm looking at an old poster here that says, imagine the possibilities, because that was our theme many years ago. And it's so true, because there's the possibilities are there, but you've got to open that door.
Mm. So, wow, you know, one of the things I loved about so many things, but the thing about being an exhibitor first, and so you can relate, but you were in those people's shoes, and just being, I mean, I can feel that, just being overly with the customer service. And yes, I have researched, and your new Living Expo is the top, the cream of the crop. It really is. I have experience with other promoters, and no, you are beyond. And so let's talk about the show that's coming on. Tell everyone where it is, where it's located. Give us all the particulars, please. And before we do that, yes, please do that. I want you to do that first. Go ahead.
So the first thing I want to say is we've spent 25 years at the concourse, from 88 to 2013. I had a 3-year sabbatical in there. But so this is the first year they were telling us last year around this time that the concourse is closing. They've been saying about this for a lot of years. They're going to turn it into condos, so you can't have your show anymore. So it forced us to look around to see where we're going to continue to do our show, that we like to keep our same dates. Well, we found the San Mateo Event Center south of San Francisco Airport, about 10 minutes, nicer than the concourse was because it had speaker rooms with walls. In the concourse, we would have to prefab these speaker rooms with pipe and drape, and acoustically they suck, and aesthetically they're fine. But, you know, that doesn't really work for most people who want to speak because the sound bleeds through. So now we have a smaller convention center with speaker rooms attached to the building, but just a common wall, and there's walls where you can turn off lights and show slides and everything like that. So we really found a nice little niche, a new home, basically, for our expo in San Mateo at the Event Center. So the dates are April 25th through the 27th, same with the last weekend of April theme, right after Earth Day, so that way we don't conflict with the Earth Day events. And it's an annual event, and we try to bring in, you know, as many interesting people as we can. We bring back some people who were with Whole Life Expo way back in the old days and bring them forward, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we try to bring new people all the time. So, like, one of my favorite people to bring back was Dick Gregory from, you know, he's like a comedian, satire, you know, futurist. And so we just got a call the other day that Narsinio Hall wants to have him on the TV show, and they're going to promote the expo, New Living Expo, on Friday night of the show. So instead of flying him to San Francisco on Friday, he's going to fly to L.A. first. And, you know, to get a guy like that to, on a major show like that to promote the expo for major TV nationwide, I mean, what? And we just heard about this like 2 days ago. We were like tickled up and down. We couldn't imagine.
Yes.
You know, that we need something like that to help propel the show to the next level, to get the 10, 15,000 people we get, which reinforces that. So we've got Dick coming back, and he was one of the people in the very first show I did. I even showed him when I had him about 4 years ago, the poster and the program guide I had from 1987 with a pink cover because my wife at the time loved pink. So I said, okay, we'll make a cover of the program guide pink, and it's the only year we ever did that.
Oh,
and
my
so
God.
I had him sign the program guide and the poster with his picture. And obviously he had black hair at that time. Now he's silver. But, you know, he got a kick out of that one. So we've got a phenomenal lineup. Most of the difference for our shows is that when you come to a show and you pay, you know, to get in, we charge like $15 to come in for a day. It includes everything. It includes all the workshops, all the panels, all the lectures, all the exhibits, all the fun things you want to do. You don't have – it's kind of like the Disneyland of New Age, right? So we have a low admission fee, and the value of that is probably $200-$300 if you went to a conference and you see all these speakers and you would have to pay this. So we make it so affordable, and if people can't afford that, they bring the cans of food in, that, you know, money is not an issue, and they come in and they enjoy the show, and there's so many different, there's like 15, 20 workshops, there's 100 lectures, there's half a dozen panel discussions throughout the weekend, plus to all the exhibitors that, you know, have all these unique and unusual products to tell you about and just try to sell you some. And, you know, it's just there's a few speakers that I'll mention, like David Wilcock and Gail Thackeray. Those two, I had them last year. They were just sensational. And people just, you know, we always put a little questionnaire at the end of the show, and who do you want to have come back? And these two got a very high request to come back, so we brought them back to do some special events with us. And, you know, they'll do some lectures too. Friday night, I always start off with, like, all the interesting people that would talk during the weekend, do a little teaser on Friday night for 45 minutes to an hour. And so I have all my big speakers, as many as I can, do little talks on Friday night just to make Friday kind of a freebie, you know, just give them a little taste of what they can do if they want to go more in-depth with two or three workshops. We have Marion Williamson this year, who's actually for the first time is Skyping in to the show, and I've always wanted to Skype speakers in to see, you know, how that works and if people are open to attend those things versus a live performance. Not as good, but, you know, you get a pretty good taste. So we're trying that out this year. I got Ken Wilber and Marion Williamson Skyping this year, and I think in the future years, if it works, we'll probably get bigger names and be able to Skype them in without having to, you know, expense with coming in. And, it, you know, for people like Deepak Chopra, they want $50,000. And it's like, well, that's great, but maybe if you Skype in, you can do it for, you know, 45 minutes out of your own home for free. So that's the kind of people we try to get to do the show without having to be a big expense, and people, for the most part, will go along with that. So we've got Moss Sajati, who's doing a healing session all day on Friday, and I've never done this before. We have sort of a pre-expo. So at 10 o'clock in the morning, he's going to do these 2.5-hour series of special events starting at 10 a.m. on Friday, so people can get like a taste of what the expo is about before the expo even opens its doors. And that's happening. That's one of our special events that's happening all day Friday. And people could break it down. They could just do one session, or they could do the whole day with him. So that's exciting. We have an organic beer and wine garden this year. We have live music that we haven't had before, because now we're in a place where they do county fairs, so we don't have to worry about sound ordinances and stuff. And we have just an immense amount of sponsors this year that we've had more sponsors this year, because the location of San Mateo, it's like in between two zones that not too many people are getting distribution of like San Francisco Weekly or the Metro, which is in San Jose. So we're like in the middle of this zone, so we end up with, instead of no sponsors, we get both people to sponsor the show. And so we've got an overwhelming request to have many sponsors with radio stations and our Channel 5 again. We're just, tickled pink to be able to get all these great sponsors to help promote the show to make it that much better. And being our first show in San Mateo, we're like, we don't know how many people are going to attend this new venue, but our feeling right now is pretty strong that we're going to probably have as successful or more successful than we had at the Concourse. And we have a smaller size show. We have 180 booths, 200 booths compared to 275. So we have less space for you to walk around to enjoy the show. And so you'd be able to cover the show in less time and be able to, hone in on the products and services you are looking for, or find that you didn't even know you were looking for. And so I think that's going to be really exciting to see what the turnout turns out to be, because you never know until, Sunday night, hey, that was outrageous, or hey, let's change something up.
It sounds exciting, and I love your new location. I don't know why, I'm just getting such a good feeling about that location. I'm just an internal feeling. But you forgot to mention one important thing. One thing on Friday. What did you forget, Ken Kaufman?
Well, let me think about what time that person's speaking, and I think it's
let me help you with that. It's 9 o'clock in the evening, I believe.
So
probably I'm the last speaker, but I will be there live. Audience, Rebecca Lynn Norrington will be live at the New Living Expo, 9 p.m. on Friday in room number
one, the same room that I'm doing a talk in too, which is great. It's a nice little convenient room. It's the only room we have that's got carpet, so you'll enjoy that. And that's 9 o'clock on Friday night of April 25th. And we have seven rooms simultaneously happening at the same time. So we wish you as much luck as you can have with getting more people to come, because of the promotion you're doing. Anybody who lives in the Bay Area, or if you don't, fly out here, come to this event, because it only happens once a year. And you miss it this year, but you got to wait a whole other year to get the next one. So you may as well try to get out here if you can,
Yes. Well, my audience will be there. I've got thousands of listeners, and my audience will be there. And I want to thank you again, Ken Kaufman. Thank you so much for being a part of the show, and thank you for sharing. Listen, even if I had no idea about the New Living Expo, I would want to attend based on your story and based on you as a, as a person, and your energy that you're gifting the world. Basically, you are gifting the world with who you are and sharing with who you are. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Rebecca, and it's been a wonderful pleasure being on your show for the last hour. And I and Karina and yourself totally invite all of your listeners to come to the show, and just remember to be open-minded and have a good amount of rest before you come to the show. Wear comfortable shoes. Just come in with a good sense of having a good time.
We will. Thank you again, Ken Kaufman. Thank you again. See you soon.
All right. Bye. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Reality Spirituality. Wow, what a great show. What a jam-packed show with so much information. Yes, that's right, the New Living Expo at the end of April. Woo-wee! I want to thank you for listening to Reality Spirituality. Reality Spirituality is heard every Saturday and Sunday. If you like more information on the coaching programs I offer, go to my website at RebeccaNorrington.com and go to the private sessions tab. If you'd like to receive my free monthly newsletter, send an email to info@RebeccaNorrington.com. Follow me on Twitter at RL Norrington. And if you've enjoyed the show, excuse me, go to Facebook and like Reality Spirituality's Facebook page. And until tomorrow, remember who you are. You are a physical extension of the universe. You're always evolving. You're always changing, and you're always growing. Love is patient, and love is kind. Be patient and be kind to yourself. Be your own best friend. Remember, you cannot have a happy ending to an unhappy journey. Talk to you again tomorrow. Reality, spirituality.
Yeah, oh, it's time to get real. Oh, yeah.
Reality, spirituality.
It's the newest spirit.
Reality, spirituality.
Yeah, keep your ears open for this one, man.
Reality, spirituality.
You got a question for RLM?
Reality, spirituality.
Time to get some answers, baby.
Spirituality.
Oh, now we get real.
Get real.